in Iraq and Syria. American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group.
A coalition including Asian nations. This week, Japan is the target of the latest hostage event from ISIS. And while the president last night touted the value of these strong international coalitions in fighting terrorism, the government of Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe may be having second thoughts about the promise of $200 million in non-military aid to the nations fighting ISIS. That's the amount ISIS says it wants to get from Japan to prevent the video execution of two Japanese hostages. Martin Fackler, Tokyo bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, is now with us from Tokyo. Martin, welcome.
Hello, John.
How much is this hostage crisis and Japan's participation in the fight against ISIS a domestic issue in Japan right now?
The interest is intense. I mean, this is the lead news item here. And, you know, for Japan, this is not the first time they've faced this sort of thing, but it's not something they face anywhere near as often as the U.S., and in many ways, it feels like a new challenge to them. And so I think there's a lot of soul-searching and questioning going on about how deeply does Japan want to get involved in the Middle East, and is supporting its ally, the United States, worth the lives of its citizens? Is it worth getting embroiled in these sorts of situations where Japanese can die?
The $200 million number, of course, echoes the amount of aid that Japan has promised to the ISIS-fighting coalition. But I'm wondering if it's also an indication that maybe ISIS is winking to the world and saying, hey, Japan has paid ransom in the past, and so they're a place to go to get cash here. Or is that completely, speculation?
Well, Japan did pay in the past. There was a case in 1999 with an official at one of the public companies that looks for natural resources, I think in this case metals, who was abducted in Kyrgyzstan and was eventually released. And while the government's never admitted it, essentially it's an open secret that many millions of dollars were paid. But if you look more recently, I think Japan has tried to change its behavior and its reputation. You know, it's been criticized a long time as essentially a pocketbook for either American policy or perhaps in this case a pocketbook willing to pay off kidnappers. And I think Japan is serious about trying to change that image. Prime Minister Abe is trying to bring Japan closer in line with the practices of the United States and its close allies like the UK and Australia. And I think not giving in to terrorists, not paying demands like this will be part of that. The question is, you know, whether he can convince the public and other members of his party to go along with that or not. One more element of this is the size of the demand, essentially $100 million per hostage. That doesn't feel like a number that even ISIS would realistically expect to be getting. It feels to me like essentially it's a political statement, and perhaps these two unfortunate men really don't have much hope.
And you alluded to this at the beginning of the conversation, but remind us just how torn Japan has traditionally been with wanting to be a player on the world stage, particularly in Asia, as China's clout has risen over the last 20 years, and wanting to stay out of these matters at the same time.
Well, I think you have to go back to 1945 and just the shock of not only the utter defeat that Japan suffered, but the feeling that it had been betrayed by its leaders and it had gone into this dark militarism that really wasn't something that the nation should have done, to put it simply. And there's a lot of remorse and, I think, regret about that. And so the way Japan's reacted to that is to have this strong aversion to anything that smacks of military action overseas, getting involved in conflicts. I mean, it's just even today, a deep-seated allergy to anything like that. And so that's one part of what's going on. And as you mentioned, the rise of China, on the other hand, is changing the equation in Asia. It really is changing the dynamic. And into that comes the current prime minister, Shinzo Abe, who has this vision of making Japan into a normal country in the sense of a full-fledged ally of the United States along the lines of the UK or Australia, or perhaps not quite that far in terms of military participation in U.S. ventures, but in other ways, joining the U.S. as really a global ally. As he pushes Japan to try to do more and more, even if it's non-military aid, right, non-lethal aid, he's got this constant pushback of people who are like, no, we don't want to get involved. You know, Japan has had 70 prosperous years after World War II, and we just don't want to change the formula. So that's kind of the tension. Those are the various conflicting poles that you're seeing now.
And at the center of it are the two hostages. I mean, what do we know about them, and how closely are people in Japan following the personal narrative of these individuals?
We know a bit about both of them, mainly through Japanese media sources at this point. But one of them, a fellow named Yukawa Haruna, is a man who I guess you could describe went to Syria to kind of find himself. He's sort of a lost soul, so to speak. His wife died of lung cancer. His business went bankrupt. He was briefly homeless. And then he shows up in Syria as sort of a self-proclaimed, you know, military advisor of some sort. You know, he doesn't advise anybody, but he just is sort of a, you know, he shows up in combat fatigues and videos that he posts on his website, shooting an AK-47 at a practice range somewhere. And he befriended some members of the Free Syria Army, apparently, and was with them when their position was overrun by ISIS and was captured, apparently in August of last year. The other gentleman is a fellow named Goto Kenji, who is a journalist, a freelance journalist. What seems to be the case there is that he had met the other fellow, Yukawa-san, in Syria, and somehow felt responsibility for the capture of Mr. Yukawa, and had gone into Syria to try to secure his release sometime in October, and that's when Mr. Goto was apparently abducted.
Martin Fackler is Tokyo bureau chief for our partner, the New York Times. Thanks so much, Martin.
No, it was my pleasure, John. Thank you.